I'm Duncan McLeod, and you're listening to a podcast brought to you by CECOM. I'm very pleased to welcome CECOM Chief Development Officer Suvir Ramdani back to the podcast for a wide-ranging discussion on the telecoms industry. Welcome, Suvir. It's great to see you again.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So we're going to talk about everything from industry consolidation to competition and regulation today, so I know it's going to be a very interesting chat. But let's start with consolidation. People have been predicting consolidation in the sector for years, and we've started to see some M&A activity in the recent past, and of course CECOM has played a role in that. Let's start by having a look at CECOM and why it's been acquisitive in recent years. You've bought some regional fiber infrastructure providers, and more recently you got approval from the Competition Commission to buy FiberCo, a national fiber backhaul provider. Maybe take us through your strategy around these acquisitions and how CECOM's approach has changed as the market dynamics have shifted.
Sure, thanks for that. Look, I think, you know, our participation in the telecoms consolidation is no different from many of the activities going on. And what's driving this generally at large within the industry is the fact that there's the collapse of the old telecoms operating model. Traditionally, telcos have always been capex intensive. They've served every service to everyone, and they've had their captive customer bases and enjoyed really high ARPUs. And I guess to some extent, this made them a bit fat and cheerful. And this is really just not the new world in which we operate in. And how did this world change? And I think a couple of things happened that we were aware of these shifts within the industry, but we didn't really react fast enough to it. And I guess the first one was the OTTs. And going back a number of years when we saw all of that ad revenue concentrate behind the OTTs, such as a Google, we thought this was going to affect the television and the print industry, and that was about it. We didn't realize the concentration of that amount of ad revenue behind an OTT. The only thing that stood behind between further growth for those OTTs and was the telcos. Mm. And they just used all of that revenue to take out the biggest obstacle. And what that means is they went out and explored with open access, Wi-Fi networks, open access metros, and those likes, and they introduced a new model. Similarly, a lot of the telcos themselves realized the need for a different model and experimented with a few. And you remember a few years ago, the towercos emerged, where a number of operated shared infrastructure and towers. That kind of thinking further perpetuated. I guess government and parastatals also saw the need for further broadband, and they intervened, introducing open access fiber models as well. So at large, all of these new models emerged. And now we're sitting with open access data centers, open access fiber, both in the long distance, the metro. We have fiber to the tower, fiber to the business, fiber to the home, that's open access. And suddenly, telcos don't need to be that capex intensive. Having said that, there always is the risk around the opex. And then suddenly a new model emerged. That means that the incumbents needed to get more efficient, and that's what's happening at the moment. So a couple of challenges have emerged, and we'd like to think of CECOM as a challenger. And what we're doing is disrupting that model. At the same time, we're trying to achieve scale so that we can also extract efficiencies.
I'm really interested in what you're saying about the OTT or so-called over-the-top players like Google and Facebook, because they're increasingly investing in what would traditionally be seen as the function of a telecommunications operator. I mean, we know Google, Facebook, and others have all invested in submarine cable systems, for example, which is a market that CECOM plays in directly. Do you expect that to continue? Do you think they're going to become even more aggressive in playing in the infrastructure market? Do you think they'll start to play in country in building out fiber infrastructure, for example?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we've seen it. So the submarines was perhaps the easy spot for them. And just so we understand what they did in the submarine industry, because it begins to show you what's driving their strategy. Within the submarine industry, they realized that many years ago, the percentage of revenue spent on submarine was actually notably high.
Yeah.
They wanted to remove that from the ecosystem and lower the cost of access to the internet. And they did that by buying bulk amounts of capacity at really cost-effective rates and then peering away a lot of that traffic for free. Mm-hmm. Which means that an ISP in South Africa didn't need to go up to London or New York to get access to content. They got access to it in Johannesburg, at Teraco for that matter. When that happened, they got their eyeballs, people watching the internet, to increase, and they got further ad revenue out of it. That's what's really driving their thinking. Similarly, I think people forget that in Uganda, Google set up a open access fiber network in Uganda. That's the African soil. And they've even got an open access Wi-Fi initiative across the continent at the moment. So they really are trying to get that internet penetration up. One really important experiment for the city of Rand was the Kansas City Fiber, where they deployed loads of fiber across Kansas, and they made it available for a really cost-effective price, a gig to each house. You know, that's a phenomenal project. And this is what I meant earlier on. If as a telco you look at that, and I know how these models work, I know the OPEX, and I know what the CAPEX is required, and I look at that and I'd say at those price points, you're going to get a payback in 7 years. You know, so I'm saying it's not that profitable. The IRRs are not great. If you look at it in that way, it's not. But they don't look at it that way. They look at the ad revenue. They look at the eyeballs, and they look at the profitability at that level, which is where I think the telco industry has been sideswiped.
And the telco industry has been trying to push in that direction too. It's been, you know, we've seen big international acquisitions and mergers of telcos buying media assets. They haven't necessarily been particularly successful around the world. But do you think that trend is going to continue? I mean, are these two industries going to become one at some point?
Yeah, I guess, you know, I remember 20 years ago, the whole concept of the triple play. You know, you want to buy your voice, you want to buy your internet, you want to buy your TV from the same person. Look, I think this is, it depends on your ethos. My ethos is I don't think it's going to work. Maybe I'm a bit of a greenie, and I believe in the commoditization of the internet. I think it's going to become a utility. What we, if as telcos, if we want to survive and we're going to do this right, we need to find out how do we make a good margin, maybe not amazing margin, but we make good margin out of giving a gig to every house. And that's it, you know, and then that's it. You've turned into a water pipe, you know. Can it be done? Absolutely. There's profitable water utilities around the world, right?
Yeah. It's interesting. So you guys have been making some acquisitions, including FiberCo, and there's always rumors about corporate activity in the telecom space in South Africa. Always have rumors coming across my desk, some of them true, some of them not. How much more is to come, do you think? And are we witnessing the creation of large new telecoms groupings in South Africa that will challenge the big incumbent players over time?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there absolutely will be a lot more activity. I can tell you what's driving it perhaps within our mindset, and then I can extrapolate it to the rest of the industry. So you have these incumbents who, like I said, were fat and bloated. They're going to lose no matter what. They'll lose because as a challenger comes on, they'll be taking away a customer. You could hold on to the customer, hold on to your market share, but you'll only hold on at a lower price point, which means that your top line's falling. You could lose the customer and keep your price points where they are, but still you've lost a customer, which means your top line's falling. These incumbents come along with their new operating models, with these barriers to entries fallen away because of the open access ecosystem, and they just like nibble away, and they just keep growing, right? And as they keep growing with this new operating model, so to speak, that's lean and mean, they too need a certain level of scale. Because once you invest in that automation, not that it's incredibly expensive, but you really want to see that automation carried through at a certain amount of scale. So I think within that mindset, a lot of the challengers themselves, the new guys, are looking to come together, bulk together, and achieve that scale. There's also a second reason. With scale comes more options. If you've built from Johannesburg to Bloemfontein, actually reticulating Bloemfontein isn't an issue of getting from Johannesburg to Bloemfontein and then reticulating it. It's actually just a small project, really. And scale actually just lends itself to further and further growth. And all of these models at times can consume CapEx. And if you diversify your exposure to different segments of the market, you're able to see your cash flows look a lot better. So if I had to call it, I think there's going to be a lot more acquisition coming through.
And what role do you see CECOM playing in that?
Look, I think our role is to continue. My short-term priority is to actually to get the integration right. So we've now on our fourth acquisition, we're looking at 5, 6, 7, 8 all at once. But I think we really want to bed down our integration. We want to get a cookie-cutter approach to how we integrate these businesses. These businesses that we are looking at, I think there'll be a few more that we can close. Having said that, our focus is shifting a little. We've done really well in South Africa, and we'd look at acquisitions in Kenya, potentially Tanzania for that matter. So we are looking at African expansion. And who knows, maybe we'll be the small fish that a big shark comes along and picks up too.
Or the other way around.
Yeah.
Of course, you guys have just announced, I think it was yesterday, that you're opening new points of presence across Africa, including, I think, in the Microsoft Azure data centers here in South Africa.
Yeah, that's right. On the back of the FiberCo acquisition, we actually have a pan-South African network. It runs through 65 towns, for that matter. You know, so we definitely have a tier two, tier three town strategy to expand in. And, you know, we bid on a very sizable asset that's been rumored in the market. I think you guys reported on it about 2-3 years ago, and we lost that to one of our biggest competitors. We still believe in that strategy. You know, South Africa is a huge market, well-established, robust, low-risk market. It takes us a small amount of effort to grow very quickly here, you know, and we'll pursue that.
Mm-hmm. Who are going to be the big winners from this as it all plays out? I imagine it's going to be much more difficult for the big incumbents to play a consolidation role given the strong oversight, if I can call it that, from the competition authorities in South Africa. For example, the incumbent fixed line operator is unlikely to be allowed to buy up assets, and the same probably applies to the big mobile operators, I'd imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is unfortunate to say that the incumbents who've perhaps invested in this market for so long are really facing this massive challenge. And until they can shift their operating models to survive at lower price points, so I guess shareholders would be happy if your EBITDA remained flat and growing, or growing modestly, even if your revenue was collapsing, right?
Mm.
But in order to get there, you've got to get past government. You've got to get past the unions. You know, so I really do feel for these the big CEOs within our industry. It's really a tough job for them. I'm afraid to say, I think that they're probably going to lose a bit of market share to many of us challengers. Yeah,
interesting. But it won't be necessarily be a net job loss, because the parts of the industry are growing while the big guys are shrinking.
Yeah. Look, I think we're now shifting towards kind of an industrial revolution discussion. Mm-hmm. The one thing I would say to sort of the whole telco industry, if you're working as an engineer or whether it's an accountant, it's reskilling.
Mm.
You know, we do see that staff within the telco industry are probably going to have to reskill themselves, moving into cloud solutions and integration work and different types of things.
Mm.
It's not going to be the same anymore. And I think any one of us who sits back and thinks that it's going to be the same for the next 10 years is probably fooling ourselves. Myself, as an example, strategy and acquisitions, probably one of the most sophisticated work that one could find within our industry. AI is going to come and replace a lot of the business analysis work that I do. You know,
Machines are coming.
You know, I thought I was a master at Excel programming. You know, if you look at what Facebook's recruiting for from a strategy and a business analysis requirement, R programming is a requirement. And that's a business programming language where you begin to model data on a massive scale and look at a variety of outcomes. That's the new strategy tool of the future, you know. So things are changing for us all.
Mm.
Yeah.
So let's expand a bit on the regulatory environment in South Africa and perhaps some of the challenges that the industry is facing from a regulatory perspective. We have two regulators governing the sector. Well, actually, there's more than two, but there's two principal ones. That's ICASA and the Competition Commission. How are their rules and regulations adding or impeding consolidation and, for that matter, growth in the sector? And are these regulations and rules a good thing or a bad thing for the development of the industry?
Look, at large, I think that both these regulators, and I'll go through each of them individually, are facing their own challenges. Policy direction, the political landscape, budget. You know, I think we've seen all the stuff that's been going on. So I really do feel for them. And, you know, when it comes to telecoms, even though I'm not a wireless guy, I feel obliged to speak about 5G and the access to spectrum. You know, if we just go back to the comments that I just made about the incumbents and the challenges. And I think spectrum is not simply about competition. A lot of the words used by government is about introducing more competitors, you know, affordability to the end consumer. And I think that's somewhat of a misnomer because, you know, one has to reflect on how well the industry has done with reducing prices. If you look at Seacom specifically, when we entered, Duncan, you'll remember, when we entered in 2009, we were building the cable systems in 2007, the cost per megabit wholesale was $3,000 a megabit.
Yeah, it was crazy. And retail prices were insane as well.
Retail prices, furthermore, were insane. People were buying 64 kilobit lines to operate their systems. It was ridiculous. today, the dollar per meg in the wholesale space is closer to like $1, $2.
Wow.
You know, so that's like a massive shift in the 10 years that we've been around. Similarly, I think, actually, perfect case in point, I no longer have a contract. I'm going to prepaid, and I'm a business exec.
Right.
You know, and I probably spend 300 rands a month on like 20 gigs of data, you know, and I buy my voice as I need it. And my bills probably drop to like 500-600 rand a month as a business exec, and I expense that. So there's no reason for me to, you know, to watch how I spend, so to speak. So I really feel the pain of these big companies. But So spectrum is not just about introducing more competition. I think the spectrum makes the incumbents healthier. These guys are big employers, and they keep a lot of people fed within our industry. These incumbents also spend a lot of money with vendors and contractors, and these contractors are not always the Nokia Siemens of the world or the Huawei's, these big giants. A lot of these contractors are people that dig up holes and put fiber in it or set up poles on which wireless equipment's being installed on. That's a lot of employees that are actually sitting around idle waiting for CapEx to flow. You know, and I worry for these guys. So I think that our entire ecosystem is being suppressed by the spectrum debate. And the last thing is, you know, think about the valuations of these big mobile operators sitting on the JSE. A lot of our pension money has been invested in these things, right? So our pension money is being held by the lack of growth within these mobile operators as well. So, you know, and the spectrum, once again, also introduces more capacity. It makes it more cost-effective for these operators to deploy more data bundles into the market and so forth. So it has a downstream benefit to consumers as well. So I think ultimately a healthy telco industry is good both for consumers, shareholders, as well as for government. Mm. And spectrum is a big step forward in achieving that. You know, so maybe I'll move on at this point into competition.
And, of course, sure.
And first of all, I'd say our experience, Seacom's experience with the Competition Authority was just amazing.
Yeah.
They were incredibly professional, very efficient, very fast, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for them. And think about a group of people that have to do competition in petroleum and then dairy industry and the next day coming into telco. Considering the challenges that they faced, I think they did an amazing job. But I think if we step back, and competition just isn't about market share and market forces. And I think competition isn't always about maintaining the status quo. I think if we look back at the telecoms industry perspective, you know, one of the things that I say, which is quite contentious or debatable in the market, is like, I'm not sure that I'd put 10,000 rands of my retirement money into telco right now, you know, on the JSE and say, all right, that's going to really set me up for my retirement. You know, I'm not sure that I would do that. And I think not many of my colleagues would do the same. And that's a worrying thing. So bringing that into competition, I think the Competition Authority has a role to play in making a healthier industry too. Sometimes these massive guys are just not doing that well. Mm-hmm. And they would be served better off if they had a sense of scale and a restructure. Because what's sweeping towards the entire telco industry, like I said repeatedly through this interview, is the need for a new operating model.
Mm. Do you think that... I mean, we've seen how the Competition Commission has scuppered a number of deals. I mean, there was the MTN Telcom radio access networking sharing deal that was that kind of had the plug pulled on them. There was Vodacom's attempted acquisition of Neotel, now Liquid Telecom, which was effectively blocked by the competition authorities. Do you think that the regulator getting involved and stopping significant industry, potentially industry-changing deals like that is a positive or a negative?
So there's two answers to this. So perhaps as a telco exec, I'm supposed to say that I support those decisions. The truth of the matter is the reason why most telco execs would use the line that I just did is because it would have made our lives more complicated because it would have created a healthier competitor. You know, so I think a lot of the objections to both of those industry, those deals that you use as examples were probably born out of selfish intentions. But if you think about it as a strategist or perhaps from a consumer perspective, and you think about where you want this industry to be in 3-4 years' time, when you look at global market forces like I just described, I think neither of those deals should have been blocked.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah. You mentioned companies doing this in their own selfish interest, and we see that everywhere. I mean, I've sat through so many hearings at ICASA and elsewhere, and you listen to the lobbyists from the different companies, and of course they're always arguing what will be best for them rather than what would be best for the rest, for the broader industry. Yeah. Do you think the regulators perhaps lean a bit too much on those lobbyists and listen to them a bit too much in making their decisions?
Yes, perhaps that's true. But then also perhaps the Competition Authority should work a bit more closely with the Telecoms Authority. Mm. And perhaps the Telecoms Authority needs to acknowledge these global trends, these global issues, you know, those sorts of things. Mm. And it's probably room for a bit more collaboration.
Yeah. So let's drill down into specific technologies and how they're impacting the industry here in South Africa and worldwide for that matter. The market has shifted significantly in recent years with the emergence of new technologies, including cloud computing, the Internet of Things, and others. How are these trends, these technology trends, impacting investments in the sector, not just from a consolidation viewpoint, but also how are they affecting business models, including CECOMs?
Yeah, absolutely. I love talking about these sorts of things. So thanks for the question. Look, I think cloud, once again, people kind of don't see what's this massive tsunami that's coming through. I guess it's always a ripple on your shore until it hits you, right? And similar, like that example I use of concentration of ad spend, which was going across, let's say, 1,000 ad or millions of ads agencies across the globe into the hands of one player. Similar wave of spend has been happening over the last 3-4 years in cloud. And I know cloud's been in discussion in various forms, cloud computing, distributed computing, you know, those sorts of things for computer networks, I remember was the term that we used in about 25 years ago. But what's happening there is all of that ICT spend that was spent by millions of businesses across the globe into the hands of millions of system integrators that were buying Cisco boxes, Juniper boxes, all kinds of Bay Network stuff, you know, to use some of the old names, you know, that kind of stuff. All of that spend then goes, and then if you think about the server and the computing industry as well, if you think about the storage stuff, all of that spend shifted now into the hands of a few global cloud providers. That's like a huge shift in concentration. And we're actually seeing global networks change from that perspective as well. Because now it's not just the Googles and the Facebooks that are now investing in submarine. You've heard big announcements by the likes of Microsoft and Amazon and the like. They're massive submarine players as well. It always starts with the submarine, first step. And because it's an easy problem to solve to some extent, especially when we're only talking about $300 or $400 million, you know, between London and Johannesburg. You know, it sounds like a lot of money, but it's an easy problem for a big spender like the OTTs to solve. Then dealing with 60 cities across Africa, even though it might cost a lot less money, is a lot more complicated of a problem to solve. Anyway, my point being is all of that shift in spend from ICT generically into the hands of the cloud players has once again changed the network architectures. But then if you think about the cloud, it's boundaryless. And this is the next wave of threat because you can have someone in Mozambique then choosing to shift its ICT spend to the hands of someone in Silicon Valley just like that. And there is no regulation, there is no control, nothing of that that takes place. And I'm not asking for it either because I think this is a positive thing. Why would that Mozambique business make that decision? Because it was the right thing for their business. It makes a healthier industry, right? And I think that's okay. Having said that, though, I worry about sort of the ecosystem. And what I'm beginning to see is that that a lot of these system integrators have the opportunity to evolve into becoming cloud consulting or cloud integrators. And once again, it requires a reskilling. And in fact, over the last 3 years, I've seen a number of these types of businesses suddenly begin to emerge. And it's not about being a Google house or a Amazon house or a Microsoft house for that matter. It's about being able to integrate all of those things into a usable solution for that specific business need. Now, whilst that's easy to talk about when you're a medium or a large business, there's another opportunity, I think, at the small business level, because there won't be a small business that needs to set up an exchange server anymore or a storage platform or any of that. Everything's just moving to the cloud, and I'm sure you probably run your own business way as well, right?
Just thinking that.
But every now and again, it gets a little bit complicated because it's one thing to teach yourself how to use a Google Docs form, but how do you build a workflow into that Google Docs form is where it gets a bit more interesting. You know, so I think there's an opportunity for job creation that comes with this. And once again, I think curriculums need to change. People need to upskill themselves where they begin to embrace this new paradigm. Similarly, though, a lot of telcos, going back, you know, at the start of this cloud hype curve, so to speak, invested into to cloud. And to be frank, not many of this did not work out. Much of these investments did not work out. And I think what went wrong there is they didn't anticipate the wave, the tsunami that would come out of Silicon Valley, you know. And it's just easier and cheaper doing business with Silicon Valley than dealing with a telco. Telcos have always struggled getting in the front door of a customer. They're really good in the basement, put in a CPE and a piece of fiber in the basement, and then leave. That's typically what they've been good at. They've really struggled to come in on a managed services basis into the front door of a customer. So I think that's one kind of looming issue that is going to face. Having said that, a number of legislative reasons have required businesses to keep their data and their operations ring-fenced within a country. So there is some off-premise private cloud solutions that have been moving off the hands of telcos and system integrators that will linger, but perhaps not as a massive scale as once one envisioned. Yeah.
It's interesting what you mentioned about cloud computing and how easy it's become to get access to compute resources. You know, someone can just sit at his desk or her desk and click a few buttons, and suddenly you have access to unimaginable amounts of computing resources over the internet. And that could potentially have a commensurate impact on the ICT services sector in South Africa and these big systems integrators that are going to have to really rethink their business models. But flowing from that, do you think that we're going to see a similar sort of service disruption happening in the telecommunications industry, where at the moment you can get compute resources as a service? Do you think in the future that someone who requires bandwidth resources, telecommunications resources, will be able to just click a button on their computer and get access to those facilities, either from a local operator or someone who provides this on a global basis like an Amazon?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is coming. However, I think it's probably further back on the hype curve than we expect it to be.
Okay.
I mean, I think the terminology in use is SDN and NFV. Hmm. And
which stands for software-defined networking and network function virtualization.
Yeah, right. Thank God I remembered. and, you know, there's been a lot of talk about this also probably for about 5 years.
Hmm.
You know, and I think we've got to be super pragmatic about it. And so there's a couple of issues here, an opportunity inside the telco and an opportunity outside the telco into the telco. So I think a lot of it's been touted as an opportunity for customers to log on to a self-provisioning portal, buy services from the telco as and when they need it. Now, if we think about that, how many businesses out there are going to authorize their IT guy to log onto a portal and spend 100,000 rands on a 100 gig service between, you know, New York and London? Not many. There's probably just general procurement governance processes that go with this, right? Mm. So I'm not that I'm being skeptical. I just think that there's a couple of more hurdles or maybe workflow issues that need to be built into these portals before one can practically, you know, allow their IT guy to randomly go and spend large amounts of money, you know?
Yeah.
Or the other paradigm is that telecoms is so cheap, it doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, which is another scary outcome, right? Having said that, though, coming back to sort of the optimization of the OPEX, because I think we spoke about how open access has resolved the CAPEX issue within the industry, OPEX is really another issue. SDN NFV has a huge role in helping reduce the cost of operating a network. Because a lot of the service provisioning that takes place on a network, you actually have an engineer that sits in, logs into routers, configures customer circuits and those sorts of things, and it takes about an hour, 2 hours at times for customer activations. A lot of that can be automated. So a lot of those provisioning services can be automated and probably have a lower error rate. And then those configuration settings for each of those customers can be recorded into a customer repository that's robust. So even problem solving that then goes back into that will be. Having said that, there will always be a need for network engineers to do capacity planning, to do break fix, physical break fix, and those sorts of things. So there will be a role. However, this will play a big role in optimizing the way we operate our networks. And in that future paradigm where cost of communications is going to be so cost effective, you need to get both your CapEx and your OpEx right. You know, and I think it's a step forward there. So to your point, though, I think it's going to come. Where we do see it actually in play today is data center to data center connectivity. Mm. So if you were looking for capacity between a Teraco in Johannesburg to London, and if you were a big wholesale customer buying from another big wholesale customer, you could probably turn on capacity automatically network to network. And it makes sense because it's a dense environment. There's a lot of physical establishment that's already in place, right? So there's no need for a truck roll or a patch lead or a engineer, technician to go out there. All of the infrastructure is established, and then you just kind of turn it on, turn it off as you need it.
I suppose you could almost have artificial intelligence built into the network as well that procures these services automatically as required.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there too, AI has been within the telco space, and you're going to see it more prevalent going forward. So there's really two places that it always comes in, and that is revenue generation and cost optimization. It's sorry if the interview sounds like an MBA or business.
No, not at all.
You know, so one of the places that I've seen it work really well, and actually you probably experience it on a day-to-day basis and you don't realize it, is something called macro segmentation and propositioning. And what happens here is this AI is watching all of the consumption data about 40 million users. It begins to learn on an individual or in a cluster of small groups rather than segmenting your customer base into 10 million people that behave this way and another 10 that behave this way. It's actually groups of people, 100, that behave this way and that. Mm. And looking at their behavior, then also simultaneously monitoring their account balance, and then finding the right moment to say to them, hey, if you buy some capacity right now, if you buy some bundles right now, I'll give you a freebie. You know, so it lures you into spending rather than churning.
And we're seeing some of the operators doing that already.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Isn't it frustrating, right? I mean, how many SMSs do you get from your mobile operator in a day?
Luckily, mine isn't doing it, but I know that there are a couple that are investing a lot of money in this.
Yeah, yeah. And I must say, I'm not sure how well it works. I think I'm not the age profile that it's supposed to work on, because I never react to adverts on Facebook or Google or on my phone either. I just don't react to adverts.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm sure there is a group of people that do react to these things, you know. The other place where it's very interestingly becoming to coming into the network for telcos is also within the network environment, where what this AI does is it looks at huge amounts of performance data. To the extent that it looks at the losses and latencies on your fiber network, and it looks at the aging of your fiber, and it then begins to predict when you're going to potentially have a break, it really begins to warn you of things to come, not things that are. Most times engineers are being reactive. So it allows you to preempt, and it proposes break fixes well in advance of the actual incident, and it justifies it. You know, so in fact, another place that AI has been, you know, sometimes AI is actually just being used now to replace complex algorithms, right? And it's not truly, you know, artificial intelligence.
Or machine learning.
Or machine learning, yeah. But on truck rolls, and truck rolls is really when you're doing service delivery and you're planning the workload of your technicians. You know, having a technician roll out to do some activity is really costly for a telco. And so optimizing the route planning, optimizing their workloads is another place where it's been. But ultimately, what's happening here is the common thread. The common thread, both of these examples, is applying actually what is a cheap resource, artificial intelligence, super intelligence, high capacity programming, onto a vast amount of data to come up with new solutions. That's what it's about. Because you can't put a human mind onto that amount of data and make recommendations. Mm. It's going to take too much staff and come in at too high cost. Even if you had to get them in at the low end of the income curve, just not possible.
Machines also make mistakes, though, you know, as we build more and more artificial intelligence into our systems and planning and that sort of thing. Is there a risk of the machines making catastrophic errors? Do humans always have to be involved to make sure that things don't go wrong?
I guess that's always going to be a bit of a risk that we're going to have to stumble through. Mm. You know, so look, I think when Henry Ford invented the car, he didn't think about the millions of lives that would be lost each year on the roads. Until the airbag was invented, some 80 years later?
Yes.
Right, and ABS brakes.
Seatbelts only came, I think, decades after the original car.
Yeah.
Before we wrap it up, Sevier, I know you're quite excited about the field of Internet of Things as well and the potential for the sector. Maybe take us a bit through that.
Yeah. So I think this is also a huge investment opportunity. We're going to see a lot of activity in this place over the next few years. But, you know, I have a slightly different take on it. And that is really that there's so much of debate around, you know, is this a solution that needs a lot of big packets of data, or does it need small amounts of data? Is this a network that can operate on a big battery within the device or a small battery within the device and so forth? And people even ask, do the existing networks, are they not able to provide exactly the requirements that are? And I actually think all of these debates are moot, because if you now think of that open access model, I think you can build all of these networks, and they're all going to, you know, not so much compete, but they're just going to kind of coexist. You know, I stumbled across a device on the internet. For 250 Rand, I bought a GPS tracking unit that used a SIM card, so mobile network. I've got a very old dad now, and so we often very worry about him, and even though I can track him through his phone, he often doesn't charge his phone and he leaves it at home. Mm. And I know what you're thinking, why is he driving? But you know, I do want to know where he is when he hasn't taken his phone with him.
Yes.
You know, so for 250 Rand, you can install this in a car, and you can chapping off a mobile device. You know, it's actually just amazing how cost-effective this is. I'm horrified for what this means for Tracker and Netstar. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's my point. I'm going to use that for like the next 12 months, and if the device doesn't work out, I'm just going to chuck it away.
Yeah.
You know, so what's the opportunity here? All of these networks are going to just coexist, but what I need as a user, a consumer, is a usable interface where all my data comes into a platform where I can control my pool pump, I can see where my dad is, I can see what it means collectively. You know, those sorts of things. So I think that's going to be a new emerging layer of intelligence that looks at all this data, that configures it into a solution for an end user. And I think we're going to see new businesses in that field emerge over the next few years.
Fascinating stuff. Sevier, it's always a pleasure to chat to you. Sevier Ramdani is Chief Development Officer at CECOM. Thanks so much for talking to Tech Central today.
Thank you. Wonderful. Thank you.